Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're getting into something that is just. It's having a huge impact across the entire financial industry.
It really is. We're talking about the massive changes in financial crime compliance.
And the scale of the problem is almost hard to believe. Let's just start there.
It's staggering. I mean, the UN estimates that criminals are laundering up to, get this, $2 trillion a year.
$2 trillion annually. And the really shocking part for me is how little of that we actually catch.
Right. Institutions are only detecting about 2% of all that illicit money flowing through the system.
2%? That's a failing grade.
It's an unsustainable gap. And that's exactly why 2026 is becoming this, you know, this line in the sand. Regulators aren't just asking for people to check the boxes anymore. They are demanding effectiveness.
So if we're moving from just like a checklist to a system that has to actually work, what's our mission for you in this deep dive?
Our mission is to really break down this inflection point. We're going to give you the key insights into how the rules are changing. We're talking new FinCEN mandates. We're talking about how the regulatory net is getting wider.
And catching new industries.
Exactly. And the tech side of it, too, especially with identity. We want to make sure that you're well informed on what effective compliance really means starting right now for 2026.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Let's start with that fundamental shift in philosophy, this mandate for effectiveness. What is FinCEN actually doing?
So the main thing, the real driver here, is a proposed rule from FinCEN that came out last June, an NPRM.
Okay.
And it basically makes one thing mandatory. It says your programs have to be, and this is the key phrase, effective, risk-based, and reasonably designed. It just moves the goalposts entirely.
So how do you measure effectiveness? I mean, it's an easy word to say, but what does it look like in practice?
It's measured by your results. Or, you know, your lack of results. It means you have to prove that your program is actually stopping illicit finance, that you're managing alerts properly.
So if you have a huge backlog of alerts, that's not effective.
Not at all. Or if you're still using some ancient rule-based system that just spits out 95% false positives, that is Exhibit A for an ineffective program.
That seems like a massive push towards adopting new technology like AI. But I know regulators have some pretty strong warnings about that.
That's the core tension. You're right. They want responsible innovation. AI is almost necessary at this point to cut through the noise. But FinCEN has been incredibly clear.
A human has to be in charge.
A human has to make the final call. The final say on a high-risk case or on filing a suspicious activity report, that has to stay with a person.
So the AI can recommend, but a person has to decide.
Exactly, and it has to be auditable. That means your AI tools have to be explainable.
You have to show your work.
You have to be able to show an examiner why the model flagged a customer the way it did. And it has to be customizable for your business and, crucially, validated on a regular basis.
And I imagine the pressure to get this right is coming from some of the recent enforcement actions, which are, they're basically horror stories of systemic failure.
They are very painful, very public case studies. I mean, in 2024, we saw record-breaking fines. And these weren't for small mistakes. They were for systemic failures where banks were hiding behind bad tech.
So things like not having enough staff, which leads to those huge backlogs you mentioned.
Precisely. Inadequate staffing, not enough resources, and these massive, unmanageable alert backlogs.
It sounds like the fine was almost the least of their worries. It's the cleanup job afterward that's the real killer. These look-back reviews.
That's the part that really gets the board's attention. I think it was at least 16 banks in 2024 were ordered to do these incredibly expensive look-back reviews.
So they have to manually go back through years of old transactions.
Yes, it's a manual retrospective deep dive to find all the suspicious activity reports the automated system missed in the first place. You end up paying millions to fix a problem that an effective program would have prevented.
So if the lesson from enforcement is get your house in order, it makes sense that regulators are also expanding the neighborhood. Here's where it gets really interesting.
They're focused on closing these known gaps that criminals have been using for decades.
Let's start with real estate. Residential real estate has always been a go-to for money launderers.
Absolutely. So there's a new nationwide rule taking effect in December 2025. It's a game changer.
Me too.
It targets all cash residential property sales across the entire country. But specifically when the buyer is a legal entity, like an LLC or a trust.
So no more hiding behind anonymous shell companies. This replaces the old system of just targeting certain cities.
Exactly. The old geographic targeting orders, the GTOs, were a patchwork. This creates a single national standard to strip away that anonymity.
But I heard there's a kind of data gap here for the banks.
There is, and it's a real practical challenge.
Right.
The new real estate reports, they're filed by title agents. And that data is confidential. It is not shared directly with the banks.
Oh, so the bank has to find this information out on its own.
Yes. The bank has to update its own due diligence procedures. When they see one of these non-finance deals with an entity or a trust, they have to proactively go and figure out who's behind it. The government isn't just going to hand them the report.
Which seems like it ties directly into the whole beneficial ownership push with the Corporate Transparency Act, the CTA.
It's all part of the same puzzle. The CTA is about finding the real human owner. And 2026 is when the rubber really meets the road on that. Financial institutions have to build that BOI verification into everything.
Not just a one-time check at onboarding.
No, it has to be part of ongoing monitoring. It has to be a core risk discipline. Your system needs to flag a change in ownership and trigger a review immediately. Otherwise, you're not continuously effective.
Okay, let's talk about the second new sector getting pulled in, investment advisors.
This one is huge. It basically brings the entire wealth management industry under the Bank Secrecy Act. The rule covers certain SEC-registered advisors, and it means they'll have to build AML programs and start filing SARs.
But the deadline on that one got pushed, right? It was supposed to be 2026.
It was. It's now been postponed to 2028 to give the SEC and FinCEN more time to align. But, and this is a big but, while that's a temporary reprieve, the direction of travel is unmistakable.
So use the extra time to prepare.
You have to. Treat this delay as mandatory prep time. Procrastinating is just not an option.
Okay, so shifting from who's being regulated to how, let's talk identity. Criminals are getting so sophisticated with things like deepfakes. The old ways of checking an ID don't work anymore.
The old paper-based check is pretty much obsolete. Biometric verification is quickly becoming the standard, just because the accuracy is so much higher.
Things like facial recognition, fingerprints.
Facial, fingerprint, voice. Both for bringing a new customer on and for authorizing high-risk payments later on.
And what's the key to stopping a deepfake?
It's all about something called liveness detection. It's the critical piece. It's technology that can tell if it's looking at a live human being who's physically present or just a photo or a pre-recorded video or some other kind of spoof. If you can't beat the deepfake, you can't trust the identity.
And for a better customer experience, we're seeing a lot of video KYC or VKYC.
VKYC has been a game changer. It takes verification time from, you know, days down to just a few minutes. It's a smart mix of AI and human review. The AI does the initial document check.
Reading the document, checking security features.
Right, using computer vision and OCR. But then for a high-risk customer, a human agent comes on for a live video chat to do that final visual confirmation.
Looking a bit further out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk about self-sovereign identity. How could something like that change the game?
It's potentially transformative. It solves the biggest headache in KYC, which is redundancy. Everyone is doing the same checks over and over. So self-sovereign identity, or SSI, is a model where you, the customer, store your own verified credentials, your proof of identity, address, whatever, in a secure digital wallet on your phone.
So once I'm verified by one bank, I can just prove it to another bank without starting all over.
That's the idea. You control your data, you reuse your verified credentials. It could lead to huge cost savings for institutions, and it's much better for customer privacy. And it's not science fiction. The EU is already pushing this with things like their eIDAS 2.0 framework.
Okay, so once the customer's onboarded with all this new tech, the job isn't done. What does all this mean for the day-to-day compliance work?
Absolutely not. I mean, customer due diligence, CDD, is still the foundation. You have to understand your customer and build that initial risk profile. And if they hit certain high-risk triggers...
A politically exposed person, a PP, or some really complex company structure.
Exactly. Then you trigger enhanced due diligence, EDD.
Which means digging deeper, right? Asking for things like source of funds, source of wealth.
That's right. And doing adverse media checks. But the real philosophical shift here is moving away from those static once-a-year reviews.
This is the continuous monitoring mandate.
Precisely. Regulators now expect continuous monitoring, or CM. It has to be a dynamic, adaptive system. You use machine learning to build a breath line of what's normal for that specific customer.
So it's not about generic rules. It's about spotting when a customer deviates from their own typical behavior.
Yes. And that's what slashes the false positives. ML can cut down that wasted effort by up to 40%.
And if the system does spot a deviation, a formal review is required.
That is the crucial event-driven review. If there's a material change, a big, weird transaction, a new negative news story, a change in ownership, the bank has to stop and formally reassess that customer's risk rating right then and there. And if you connect this to the bigger picture, it closes that huge time gap where money laundering used to happen, you know, between those old static review dates. This is how you actually achieve effectiveness.
Zoom out to the global level. The FATF travel rule, which is all about cross-border payments, what's the big change there?
So the 2025 updates clarify that the rule applies to all value transfers. But the most critical change is for the institution that's receiving the money.
Okay, what's their new obligation?
For any cross-border payment over $1,000 or euros, the beneficiary's bank now must take the sender information they receive and actively use it in their own transaction monitoring.
So they can't just ignore where the money is coming from. That puts a lot more responsibility on the receiving end.
It closes a major loophole. And beyond that, FinCEN has been issuing very specific threat advisories that they absolutely expect banks to build into their risk models.
Can you give us the highlights? What are the big threats compliance teams need to be looking for right now?
There are a few key ones. First, specific typologies for ISIS financing, which often uses charities and complex international transfers. Second, Iranian oil smuggling and shadow banking, which involves illicit shipping and very complicated payment chains.
And third,
and this is a major one, fentanyl illicit finance. They've detailed the patterns to look for. Structured cash deposits, funnel accounts, and direct payments to chemical suppliers in China.
And if your program isn't designed to look for those specific things, you can't really claim it's risk-based.
You absolutely cannot. And this all loops back to the technology piece, to this need for responsible AI governance.
Right. So if you buy a fancy AI system from a vendor, how do you prove to an examiner that you actually know what it's doing?
You have to have strong governance and audit frameworks in place. But the key requirement is that your compliance teams need to be trained on the explainability tools.
So they can actually understand and justify what the machine is telling them.
Exactly. So that any automated decision, a high risk score, a decline application can be fully explained in human terms. You have to be able to answer the question, why did the machine do that?
So to wrap up the 2026 landscape, it's a mandatory pivot to digital. It's a shift to dynamic, continuous monitoring as the new normal. And it's compliance expanding into new areas like real estate. Excellence is now all about how defensible your systems are.
And that delay for the investment advisor rule to 2028, it's not a vacation. It's mandatory study hall. The clock is still ticking.
I agree. Let me just leave you with a final thought, and this one is about crypto. The Department of Justice has signaled a bit of a shift. They're focusing less on compliance issues at the crypto exchanges themselves and more on the end users, the individuals committing fraud or sanctions evasion. That responsibility is now shifting downstream to you. So the question to think about is this. If the regulators are looking less at the platforms, how much stronger does your monitoring need to be to catch the illicit activity coming into your bank from those individual crypto users? Something for you to mull over.